Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
It's Columbo right here for you. It's Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everyone. And I want to say, wake up, America. Is the American dream on the verge of the American nightmare? That was a phrase I coined back in 1989, believe it or not, on AM/FM radios in Southern California. And now we are on podcast because of the advanced technology, which makes it a worldwide listenership because people can listen on YouTube, a new channel, by just typing in Columbo Chronicles, and you have a wonderful list of human interest stories and fiction and political satire and self-help and coaching and just about any topic you can think of by experts. Some are from around the world, but mostly from America, and as well as authors with their special expertise in their coaching or their books or their script writing associated with Hollywood movies that you love. What would we do without writers, right? Well, today we do have a very special guest, and he is an author. And he is a writer, obviously, so like myself. And his name is Alan E. Parker, Jr. And we have a topic that is controversial and always has been since the law was passed. And he put out a book that you are going to be very, very interested in and want to share with your family and friends and maybe give as a gift. I am pleased and honored, he says, to announce the launch of his new book, The Lord Called Him to Write, Reversing Roe versus Wade, My Journey with Roe, Doe, and God. He wrote the book to glorify God, to give praise and glory to his name, and to extol him for the mighty work he did to reverse Roe versus Wade, which is a very controversial topic in America and around the world. So all proceeds, he says, goes to the Justice Foundation. We'll ask him some questions about the foundation as well as his book and his background in just a moment. But first of all, I wanted to tell you about my book that is an International Irwin Award winner, and it's also been considered for film. It is political satire, and it's right along these lines of depopulation. The name of the book is Obamasaurus, and it is a legacy of how the Judeo-Christian dinosaur nation was depopulated, or were they made extinct. And that is an adventure story. It is a thriller with an Orwellian twist. And it is also what I say about my book is that it is a message for humanity. It is said to be masterfully crafted by literary agents around the country, and many have inquired about the film rights. So say a little prayer for Obamasaurus and the Rose here, because God can open doors and windows and make things happen when we least expect it by people who love us and care about us in our work, especially writers. Because writers, you go to the movies, you watch television, you hear speeches, you read books, you read articles, you go to school, you study books. All of that is accomplished by writers. So let's give a cheer for the writers. And on that note, I'm going to take a little break And then we're going to come back and we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world, written with an Orwellian twist. Will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com. Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world, written with an Orwellian twist. Will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Experience right there with Obamasaurus, so maybe that is an omen, right? So listen to this, because we are about to enter into the Justice Club on Colombo Chronicles, because I am a longtime advocate for justice, and I've been leading marches, not anymore, but I did lots of marches against injustices, helping victims and consulting with them around the country, and doing writings and newspaper articles. I've been in magazines and newspapers. Maybe you've seen me. And if you haven't, well, that's okay too, because now you're listening to me. So God bless you, because our fight back for justice is so important.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because now we're going to enter into the world of justice on the Justice Club on Colombo Chronicles. And we're going to be talking, if you missed it, to Alan E. Parker Jr. And we're going to ask him his background so he can explain his wonderful background, actually, and his fight for life. And of course, personally, I am pro-life, not ashamed to say it, always have been, always will be. So I want to get started, because this is exciting to me, being an advocate for justice. So let's just say hello. Hi there, Alan E. Parker Jr. How are you today?
Fine. Call me Alan. I'm glad to be on your show, Rose. Thank you for having me with you today.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's an exciting topic for me, because I am a pro-lifer. And when I was leading marches, I was driving down the street. I didn't know much about abortion back then in the 90s, because it wasn't really a topic. Anybody really talked about it, other than seeing little bits of a protest in the news, but nobody actually explained it to the public of what was actually happening. So I pulled over and I said, well, are these people protesting? I got to find out, because I was on AM/FM radio at the time. So I stopped, and they were pro-lifers, and they gave me a tape, and they were filling my head with information. And so they were in front of a abortion clinic protesting. And so I went home. And that night I listened to the tape, Alan, and I tell you, it changed my whole outlook on the importance and significance of abortion. So, Alan, tell our audience and myself about your background, because and how you have a passion for this particular topic, reversing Roe versus Wade, my journey with Roe, Doe, and God.
Well, thank you very much, Rose. I am a lawyer. I'm a licensed member of the Bar of the United States Supreme Court, which means I can practice before that court. And that's where most of my practice actually occurs as a lawyer. I've written over 20 to 25 briefs at the United States Supreme Court. And in the year 2000, I'm also a former professor of law, and in the year 2000, I began to get the opportunity to represent Norma McCorvey, who was the Roe of Roe v. Wade, and also Sandra Kano, who was the Mary Doe of Doe v. Bolton. And together, Norma and Sandra's two cases together brought abortion on demand through the more famous case called Roe v. Wade. But Doe v. Bolton was a companion to that case, and they were tied together. So in 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court purported to find a right to abortion in the United States Constitution. And I say purported because on June 22nd of 2024, on June 24th of 2022, the United States Supreme Court reversed the 49-year-old precedent of Roe v. Wade and said there, in fact, is not and never has been a right to abortion in the Constitution. And we began to have the opportunity in 2000 to represent Norma and Sandra, and both of those women wanted to reverse their own cases at that time. But believe me, in 2000, nobody thought that Roe v. Wade would ever be reversed in America. But just, you've mentioned justice. One of the arguments we made in the case is that abortion is a crime against humanity, and the Supreme Court has committed crimes against humanity before. When I mention these two today, I think everyone in your audience, no matter how controversial today's issue is, they'll all agree slavery and segregation were also crimes against humanity that were once sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what is a crime against humanity? When the government withdraws legal protection from a class of human beings, that's a crime against humanity. And everybody can think of something in the past that they agree is a crime against humanity. The term actually comes from the Holocaust. But we didn't use that in our arguments because the Supreme Court didn't do that. But the Supreme Court upheld slavery as being an indelible part of the Constitution in a case called Dred Scott before the Civil War. And it was so outrageous that many people think it caused the Civil War. And then even though the Civil War ended slavery, then in 1896, the Supreme Court again created a crime against humanity by one of its decisions. And in Plessy versus Ferguson, they upheld segregation. Again, they withdrew legal protection from the class of human beings, African Americans, and said they're not going to get equal protection. They're going to get separate but equal. And they made up a rule that wasn't in the Constitution. And for 54 years, until Brown v. Board of Education, that was the law of the land. It was enshrined in the Constitution, and the segregationists shouted, segregation forever, segregation forever. But in 1954, the Supreme Court said we were wrong. Segregation should never have been in the Constitution, and we reverse our wrong decision. We're not creating new rights for African Americans. Those were in the Constitution. But today, 1954, we're reversing Plessy, which was 59 years old. So what did the Supreme Court do? Pretty much just the same thing in 2022, June 24th, when they reversed Roe v. Wade. They said, we were wrong. The Supreme Court was wrong. We withdrew legal protection from children. We thought we were helping women. We didn't know about this better remedy that applies today. But we say, we were wrong. And abortion is like segregation. And that's one of the arguments that we made and that Justice Alito even asked and said to the Solicitor General of the United States. He said, was Plessy versus Ferguson wrongly decided? And you can ask, we can ask your audience members that. Was segregation wrong, even though the Supreme Court said it was in the Constitution and the law of the land? And everybody today knows that was wrong. So then he asked her, and the Solicitor General of the United States, Elizabeth Prelogar, said, yes, Your Honor, it was wrongly decided from the beginning. And then he said, well, if someone had come to us 8 years later and asked us to reverse our case, should we have done so? And of course, the answer is yes, but she hemmed and hawed and couldn't say that because they were arguing that Roe v. Wade was the law of the land, settled forever, a super precedent, and could not be set aside. Finally, she said, "Well, Your Honor, this court has never overturned a major decision without a substantial change in law and circumstances." And that's when Justice Amy Coney Barrett jumped in with one of our second arguments and said, "Doesn't the safe haven law eliminate all burden of parenting that Roe v. Wade was so concerned about?" And she hemmed and hawed, "But the safe haven law does eliminate all burden of parenting. And you called this case a controversial case and a topic, but I believe the arguments that were made and the new safe haven laws in all 50 states are going to end the abortion wars in America, and they're going to make slavery and they're going to make abortion as unthinkable as slavery and segregation are today for three basic reasons." I'll just kind of conclude with this. And these were in our briefs, and these were the arguments that the Lord God told us to bring to the court. And I want to go back over that beginning because that's the amazing thing. God gave us a promise. He was going to reverse Roe v. Wade. He told us how to do it. He's going to do amazing things. And the book is about the amazing things he did. But let me just get back to the argument that I think will end the abortion wars. Abortion kills a human being. And why do I know that? Thousands and thousands of women who were injured by abortion, who began to feel like murderers. Everything I know about abortion, I'm going to talk on this call with you today, are from the testimonies of women hurt by abortion. We gave the Supreme Court over 4,700 legally admissible testimonies that abortion hurts women because you can't kill your own child without it damaging you. But the third argument helps women. And that is today, every state has a safe haven law. California, New York, no matter how liberal pro-abortion they are, they say you can relinquish your child within a certain period of time after birth with no questions asked, no legal procedure, and no cost, unlike abortion, which costs minimum $800 to $1,000. We will take your baby and relieve you of 18 years of parenting obligation. We will take the burden of parenting from you. And then what will we do with those children? We'll give them to the loving homes that are waiting to adopt newborn children in America. So with that, I think one day abortion is going to be illegal and unthinkable, just as much of a thing of the past as slavery and segregation are. We have a better way to help American women today.
Well, I think I have a question for you may not have ever been asked. I know that abortion in the past was very rare before Roe versus Wade, because I looked it up statistically a couple years ago, and it only allowed for incest, the mother's health, and rape as a decision. And but now it's on demand, whether it's months down the road, whether it's in full-born babies, whether it's at birth, whether it's after birth. The liberals are asking even 28 days after birth. And that, to me, is homicide. And even detectives have stated online that that is homicide. But yet these liberals don't see it as homicide, or not just liberals, whoever doesn't agree, with pro-life. And it's so scary. And so I was wondering, in the case of, you remember Peterson, where he was accused and went to prison and charged with murdering his pregnant wife. I wrote a book in 2010, self-help, called Fight Back Legal Abuse. And I asked the question, how can a man be charged with a double murder if abortionists and the Supreme Court doesn't believe that a baby inside a pregnant woman, probably at any stage today, is illegal or murder, so or homicide. So how can a man who, he was set free recently, not so long ago, and his accusation charges were overturned. But at that time, I was concerned because if there's abortion laws that are approved by the Supreme Court in the states at that time, then how in the world could prosecutors charge someone with a double murder if fetuses and babies were non-humans?
We ask a very good question. It seems anomalous. It seems like schizophrenic. But we've made an exception. If the baby is unwanted, it can be murdered. If it's wanted by the mother, then it's murder. And Scott Peterson was the gentleman who murdered his pregnant wife, and her body rolled up, and she was dead, and the baby was dead. And that actually led to the passage of a federal law called the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. And it is a federal crime to kill a woman. If you shoot a woman or drown her and she's pregnant with the child, it's a double murder. And in that, there's 37 states at least that have laws like that, and the Federal Unborn Victims of Violence Act. So one of the things that's actually true right now that many people don't know, and that I learned once God called us to collect the testimonies of women hurt by abortion, is that one of the ways abortion hurts women is that sometimes men force women to have an abortion because they don't want the baby. They don't want to be a father. They want a continuous sexual relationship with no children. And so often women are the victim of violence and coerced abortion. And thank God, coerced abortion and violent abortion is illegal in all 50 states, California, New York, no matter how liberal they are. A voluntary abortion is legal, and that allows the death of the child. But an involuntary abortion is illegal in every state. And if you kill that child in 37 states, you can be guilty of murder or fetal homicide. So going back to the book and the call the Lord gave us in 2000, we got the opportunity to represent Norma and Sandra. And these two women who had won landmark decisions, they wanted to go back to the Supreme Court and have their cases reversed. That was amazing. That was unusual. It never happened before in American history. And so it kind of just struck me. And a few years before that, in 1998, some young female lawyers, women, recent graduates of law school, came to me and said, we want to do something to help protect women and babies. We want to stop abortion. What can we do? And at that point, Roe was the law. We said, well, there's not much you can do except maybe regulate abortion facilities to protect the women's health, because there weren't even sufficient regulations. In 1998, women who'd been hurt by abortion began to come to the Justice Foundation. Their uteruses had been punctured. They had sterility problems. They'd almost bled out and died. And it was just horrible physical complications. That was our first indication of the dangers of abortion. And those continue even today with the chemical abortion pill, which maybe we can talk about later. But chronologically, started a women's self-protection task force because of these two young female lawyers, Kathleen Cassidy Goodman and Anna Torres of San Antonio. And then in 2000, we were called, and Norma and Sandra both wanted to reverse their cases. I went to Washington, D.C. I attended my first March for Life. I met Norma there. I started reading her book called Won by Love. And in the way back, when I was in the Dallas airport, it hit me that Norma and Sandra could file their own Rule 60 motions to set aside their case. That's just a procedure that says if the decision is no longer just, it can be set aside, but you have to be a party to the case. So only Norma and Sandra and the states of Texas and Georgia, which they had sued to strike down their abortion laws, only those four groups could really file the case. And Norma and Sandra were one of them. So I got that idea in the Dallas airport where Norma was from, and I am a Christian. I'm not ashamed of the gospel in any way whatsoever. I was sort of raised in a Catholic family. I married a Presbyterian and became one by marriage. But in about my 29th year of life, I really surrendered my life to Jesus Christ. I really realized there was a God. I realized I'd been running away from him, and I decided to surrender to the Lord. I said, whatever you want me to do from this day forward, I'll do. And that dramatically changed my life. I believe that's when I became born again and passed out of death into eternal life, because Jesus died on the cross for me. But it did dramatically change my life. That's when I became a professor. And then we had this opportunity in Thousand to represent Norma and Sandra. So then I began to pray. Oh, I said, Lord, is this really you? Nobody can overturn Roe v. Wade. I said, Lord, it's the biggest brick wall in the law. Nobody can get through this. We lawyers called it the abortion distortion. And I really wasn't doing a lot of pro-life work. I told the lady attorneys, I said, well, you all can do that under our umbrella, but you don't do this unless you're called. And so I was praying, how can anybody break through? And Lord, do you really want us to do this? And we prayed for 30 days. And about the 30th day on February 11th of 2000, we began to get the firm answer of the Lord. And that day, Sandra Cano, who was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, the companion case to Roe, called me and asked me if I'd represent her in this other case. And I said, I'd be happy to do that. And also I said, I believe that you could file your own motion to set aside your own case of Doe v. Bolton directly. And she said, Mr. Parker, that case has been a doom on my shoulders since the day I got involved in it. And the book describes in great detail these incredible circumstances, which we then, and the book has her sworn testimony, along with Norma McCorvey's sworn testimony that we gave to the Supreme Court. Hers was a story of fraud and deception on the court. She was purported to want an abortion and didn't think she could take care of a baby. And instead, during the pendency of the case, they packed her suitcase. They said, tomorrow you're going to go into the hospital in Georgia and get a therapeutic abortion. Because at that time, if three doctors agreed you needed an abortion for your health, you could get one. And she said, no. And she took her suitcase and fled to Oklahoma during the pendency of the Doe v. Bolton case to avoid having an abortion. And they said to her, well, if you come back and don't say anything, we won't make you get an abortion. And so she didn't have an abortion. She didn't want an abortion. She fled to have an abortion. And that was really my first contact of someone trying to coerce a woman to have an abortion because they thought she needed the abortion. They didn't think she could handle a child. And it's true that some of Sandra's children had been taken from her by Child Protective Services, but she wanted those children back. She'd never dreamed of taking the life of a child. But she was quiet. She didn't say anything. The court only knew her as Mary Doe. And in the oral argument, one of the judges even said, well, what does it matter whether she's real or not? We will assume these facts are true. And that really cut Sandra to the heart. She said, it does matter. I'm a real person. And in 1988, she came out publicly to say, I was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, Mary Doe. That was me. And the book details her incredible struggle to unlock her own records. Her own lawyer, her own pro-abortion lawyer, fought to keep her from unsealing her own records, which were supposed to be for her protection. But when she wanted them unlocked, the lawyers were protecting themselves. So it was this is an incredible story of fraud and deception on the court. That's in the book, all documented, and a very little known story. So I said, my gosh, this is fraud on the court. And that night I came home. My wife gave me a little book called The Bed's Too Short and Other Spiritual Essays. And it says, if you get this book, then you better go with God or you're going to be too cramped. Because Isaiah 28:20 says, the bed's too short and the covers are too cramped. Not one you get here preaching on, but the next morning I got up and read it. So this is what it says. And this, think about this from someone who wasn't looking for this passage. In God, do you want me to overturn Roe v. Wade? Isaiah 28:14-22. Thus says the Lord to the mocking rulers who rule my people in Jerusalem. So God is speaking to rulers. Some translations even say judges. God is speaking to the judges. He says, quote, behold, you've made a covenant with death. You don't think the overwhelming scourge will reach you because you've covered yourself with fraud and deception. Wow. I just got tingles because that's what Roe and Doe are, a covenant with death. 60 million people plus have died because that agreement with hell, that agreement with the grave entered into by the highest court of our land. And God calls it a covenant with death. I was just shocked. Later, I found out the abolitionists of slavery had called the Dred Scott Supreme Court decision enshrining slavery in the Constitution forever, they thought, a covenant with death also. So this was a historic phrase in the Bible. I'd never heard it before. Then God goes on to say, I will make justice the measuring line, and waters will overflow the secret place, and your covenant with death will be annulled. Your agreement with the grave will not stand. And again, I got goosebumps because in Rule 60, which is what I was going to use, it says, if it is no longer just, the judgment will be set aside. So justice is the measuring line. And the waters overflowing the secret place were the tears of women as they filled out these affidavits. Because at the same time, the Lord had told me, collect the testimonies of women hurt by abortion. You have to get the testimonies to the court. And at that time, the pro-life movement was very focused on the life of the child. You can prove it's a human being, a member of the species, Homo sapiens, with science. But no one had talked about the women and the damage it caused women. So the Lord told us to do that. And I knew no woman could fill it out without crying. And where is the pain of abortion? Right now, it's locked up in the secret places of women's heart. So then it goes on to say in verse 18, for I, the Lord, will rise up as at Mount Perazim. I'll be stirred up as in the valley of Gibeon to do my amazing, unusual, extraordinary task. And I didn't know what Mount Perazim meant, but it was a place where David fought a battle against the Philistine. He named it Baal Perazim, which means the Lord, the master of breakthroughs, because he broke through our enemy like the breaking of many waters. And I had been telling God, nobody can break through the stronghold of abortion. And here he told me in the Bible that one of the names of God is the master of breakthroughs. And in battle, you don't usually have the breaking of waters. David said he broke through our enemies like the breaking of many waters. And in abortion and childbirth, you have the breaking of the woman's waters before either the birth of the baby or the death of the baby through abortion. So I knew this was a word from the Lord for me. And when he said he's the master of breakthroughs, I said, okay, God, I'm going with you. You can do it. Nobody else can, not smart lawyers, nobody else. So then the rest of the book kind of chronicles the amazing things that happened to get this done. Just think about it. Some of them are well known. Quite a bit of them are secret, less known, and I put them in the book.
Well, that is so, so intriguing and educational and empowering for women. This is amazing. This is amazing that God is working, because I had stated that you said 60 million. I had read 70 million somewhere down the road. Babies had been aborted in America. So what we're looking at is a depopulation program, because more babies have been killed on abortion tables by abortionists for profit and depopulated as natural born Americans. And I'm just talking about America right now. It doesn't include the rest of the world. And so, in my opinion, that is part of the depopulation program of natural-born Americans, because you're talking about more people than that who would be with us today to fight back against the injustices that are going on in our country. And we have natural-born Americans that had been killed and on the battlefields during the Vietnam War. If you lined up all those babies, imagine, or piled them up, how high would they reach? And I think about these things, and nobody thinks about these things much, because it's uncomfortable, and maybe people feel guilty, maybe they're sad or whatever. But we have to think about these things, because these are human beings. They would have been natural-born Americans, and it wouldn't be just 70 million people, Ellen. It would be their children. as their DNA, the God-given DNA, as their generational children and grandchildren being born to preserve this great nation that is the only nation, one nation under God, and the only nation that says that, to my knowledge, constantly. It's part of our social society, and at least it was until recently. It's a little more difficult today. But the other point I wanted to make is that not only is it a depopulation program for profit, they have turned humanity, which are babies as well, into human commodities for human capital and human collateral, because they are also selling the baby part for profit and turned all of this in, which is organ harvesting, into a multi-billion dollar business. And nobody's talking about this. And it is a multi-billion dollar business along with a depopulation program of natural-born Americans. And there are six countries in Europe who are now, their birth rates are so low, they don't even expect them to exist in the future. Because without babies, we have no future. What do you think?
That's absolutely right. I use the more conservative figure of 60 million plus, because that's what's admitted by the industry, but they don't even record all the abortions that do occur. The number is much higher. And it is a depopulation. It's choosing death over life. And when you do that, you can bring death into your country. Just as the women who've had abortions tell me, they bring death into their bodies. Abortion is the only place where a murder occurs inside a woman's body. And it's like a covenant with death. Some women feel it instantly as soon as they get in there and it begins. Some women try to jump up and get out of there. And sometimes the doctor won't let them do it. Sometimes they said immediately, my God, what have I done? Other times, sometimes they feel relief that the crisis that made them feel like I had no choice but abortion is over. And there can be temporary relief. That's something that they admit. But then all of a sudden the curse. And I'm going to tell you some of the stories women have told me. For example, a woman aborted her first child, and they told her it's just a mass of tissue. That's one of the ways the abortion industry lies. You could say all of us are just a mass of tissue, but that's false, misleading. There's more to human beings than a mass of tissue, even though we are tissue and bone and blood. But anyway, they say it's just a mass of tissue. One woman said when she went in for her second child to have a sonogram done, they said, okay, we're going to show you the sonogram. They said, we're going to listen to the heartbeat now. And she said, there's no heartbeat. There's no heartbeat. Oh, yes, the nurse said, this time we're going to let you hear it. They told me there was no heartbeat. There's no heartbeat. And she realized that she had killed her own child with a heartbeat when she heard the truthful testimony of a sonogram recording her son, or revealing her son or daughter's heartbeat. That's one of the reasons the abortion industry has opposed sonogram bills all across the country, even though medical practice requires them to do a sonogram to see how many babies there are that they're going to kill so they can remove all the body parts. Now, another thing they tell you is 10 minutes, you'll never have to think about it again. I remember Tina from Georgia telling me this. She said, that woman lied to me. There's never been a day go by I haven't thought about my child. Women have nightmares. They have drug and suicidal thoughts, and they get into drug dependencies. They allow men to abuse them because they feel worthless. Sometimes they overreact and become overprotective mothers. Sometimes they have sexual dysfunctions because they're afraid so desperately of getting pregnant and perhaps killing another child. Another woman remembers she went to get the abortion because she was a single mother with one small child. And a friend took care of the baby for her while she went to get the abortion. When she got home, her friend offered her the baby. And she said, no, 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 no. And she ran into her bedroom crying, because she realized she had just killed a baby. And so she became unable to bond with her other child. And that's called attachment disorder. There's a host of psychological problems. The British Journal of Psychiatry has reported on these things. The abortion industry ignores it. Even the U.S. Supreme Court has said in a case called Planned Parenthood v. Casey that abortion could cause devastating psychological consequences to women. That was the Supreme Court in 1992, but does the abortion industry tell them that? No. There are going to be billions of dollars worth of lawsuits against the abortion industry, just like the tobacco industry eventually got. They were hiding the data for decades, and yet it was killing people and injuring them. They're going to face a host of lawsuits in the future. But this is one of the amazing...
Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention now that you're talking about responsibility, the family law courts after Roe versus Wade and then the men's rights organizations popped up and began plotting in the 70s. And by the 90s, they were not protecting, in my opinion, many times. And I also met with Senator DeCampus, who was out here to speak to me about what was happening. They were not protecting the rights of the child. They were taking children away from non-offending parents and putting them in foster homes until the divorce was finalized, or even giving them to custody to abusers. Let's just say that, and taking the child away from the mother. Well, my thought on that was they were diminishing the phrase that we always believed in, that the sanctity of the baby, the sanctity of motherhood. And motherhood was being diminished in the court system, maybe not all courts, of course, but it started there, and at least in Southern California. And so this organization that started this attack basically on housewives and being a wife and a mother, having the family unit, the husband working, the wife taking care of the kids and the family and everything that goes into it, and diminishing motherhood, diminishing the life of a baby as being sacred and a creation of God, and just all of it went together. I mean, it was like something we didn't see, most people didn't see, because they weren't involved in the judicial system at the time. Most people believed, like I did until I had firsthand experience, that that justice prevailed, the truth prevailed, that everything was objective, fair. Attorneys defended you. The judge was objective. It was equal. Just people did not know what was actually happening, how this political agenda that was, in my opinion, totally anti-American was coming. It's more like socialism, fascism, and communism, all rolled into one, somehow intermixed, and was slowly, consistently, quietly changing motherhood, the sanctity of motherhood, the sanctity of life and the babies, and the need for babies, because without babies, as I said, we cannot preserve our nation. It's impossible. And as more and more illegally enter our country, they do not take contraceptives for the most part from these third world countries. They do not they do not get abortions. They have large families. They believe in large families. So this program has also put us in a vulnerable position where maybe in another decade, two decades, who knows, we could possibly lose our country to illegals who overdominate and our nation just by overpopulation. So I believe abortion goes much further, and more political than just this issue here, you know. I believe, you know, God puts all this on my heart, too, so I just have to say it. Whether the left likes it or not, I don't care, because we have to have critical thinking and think about these things, or else everybody's going to be turned into a mindless zombie.
Yes. Well, God told the nation of Israel not to sacrifice their children to gods, and abortion is child sacrifice. And one of the penalties for disobeying this law is that foreigners will invade your country. And eventually, Jerusalem and Israel were overrun, because that's what God says will happen to you if you don't repent. And our nation needs to repent. And let me say this to the women who've had abortions who may be taking this. I represent thousands of women. I understand the pressure. I don't come to condemn any woman. And abortion is a sin. It is a grievous act against God, but it's not the unforgivable sin. There is forgiveness and healing through Jesus. One of the chapters of the book is the women talking about their abortions in their own words. This is eloquent, magnificent testimony that everybody listening to this needs to get the book, so they have these testimonies as well as Norma and Sandra Roe and Doe's testimony, because this will convince people who want to help women. We all want to help women, but that there are some who think abortion's the only answer. But there's also abortion recovery healing programs around the country that the women pretty much had to start for themselves, but which are now recognized by psychiatrists and mental health professionals as well. But at first, everybody ignored the injured women, just like they did in earlier times. But there's healing, there's abortion recovery programs. You can get it on our website, thejusticefoundation.org. You can buy the book there. But you can also give us your testimony, because this work, when the Lord called us to do it, it birthed two new social movements, Operation Outcry, Silent No More, and the Moral Outcry petition to make abortion illegal in all 50 states. And the Operation Outcry is the women giving us their testimonies in legally admissible form. And you mentioned how this stuff that you know now, not many people know. That's the purpose of the book, too, to educate people. It's a fascinating historical study. I mean, think about this. The election of Donald Trump was one of the most amazing things in American history. The hearing from hell that Kavanaugh had to go through. Gorsuch required the nuclear option to get him on the court. Justice Ginsburg died on Rosh Hashanah, a Jewish high holy day that begins the 10 days of repentance leading up to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement on the Jewish calendar. The Dobbs case got there before Ginsburg died. It was considered by the case 22 times. No one expected her to die, but she did. And then Amy Coney Barrett danced into the court like a ballerina, though nobody thought the Senate would have enough guts to nominate her and confirm her, or to confirm her just before an election. Senator Mitch McConnell, if you remember when Donald Trump, before Donald Trump was elected, Scalia died under unusual and suspicious circumstances. And yet that death, and there's a backstory on that in the book that's very, very fascinating, that death helped focus the attention of the nation on the election of the Supreme Court. And Donald Trump did some things no Republican candidate would have done. He said, I will appoint three judges who will reverse Roe v. Wade. And the rest of them would have said, the standard Republican lie, I will appoint judges who are strict constructionists. Well, a bunch of the strict constructionists think abortion's in the Constitution because the judges said it so. But that's not what makes the Constitution. And I want to say this. Our book then, the Operation Outcry Women, moved into being the moral outcry movement to reverse Roe v. Wade, which was done. In the Dobbs case, we had over 500,000 signatures in our brief in the Dobbs case. People told me that could never be done. There's an interesting little story where the clerk kind of tried to object. I made a good argument. We got people praying over the weekend, and on Monday, the Supreme Court clerk's office called and apologized to me for not filing the brief and said, we'll get everything done and fixed for you, Mr. Parker. So God did it. No one had ever filed a petition like this with the Supreme Court before. They said it couldn't have been done. But in 2017, there's this amazing testimony in the book about Melinda Tebow, the founder of the Moral Outcry petition, coming to me and say, Al, has anybody ever done a Supreme Court petition asking the court to reverse Roe? I said, no. She said, can it be done? I said, well, there's no rule against it, so yes, I think it could be done. Because we have a right to petition the government for redress of grievances. And it was the Supreme Court who created this crime against humanity. Not the states, not Congress. The court did it. So it had to be the court who fixed the problem they created. And there was a book that came out that very same year where signed by with Justices Gorsuch and Justices Kavanaugh as co-authors with eight other judges of a book called The Law of Precedent on how to overturn Supreme Court decisions. So we had this book authored by two members who were just judges at the time, but then got on the Supreme Court that said what I was doing was a proper way. Because one of the reasons was if the decision has been met with general dissatisfaction, protest, or severe criticism, then it's a good reason to overturn it. And by calling it a crime against humanity, that is severe criticism. So it's a crime against humanity. It hurts women. There's the safe haven law today. No woman has to parent a child if she doesn't want to. We can help women by saying, don't kill the baby. Don't hurt yourself. Please give us the baby at no charge to you. It's free, unlike abortion. And it doesn't disproportionately kill black children as abortion does, because blacks are only about 10% of the population, but they're 30% of the abortions. We're killing our black population. The black population became the second largest minority because they kill more of their children. But that's because Planned Parenthood targets them, and Planned Parenthood is racist. Margaret Sanger was a racist. Current employees of Planned Parenthood have sued them for being racist, and even their president has admitted that they're racist past. They've changed the name of the street in front of their national headquarters from Margaret Sanger Avenue to something else to cover up their racist past. So we're moving forward. This book will help you. You can become the member of the Moral Outcry at themoraloutcry.com. And we're going to present these three arguments along with the argument that there are no unwanted children. Remember when we said if it's a wanted child, we don't kill it? Well, every state, California, New York, say, give us your children. It's 3 days in California. It's like 60 days in Texas. You can go to National Safe Haven Alliance, click on their map, and they'll tell you how many days you have it. But think about it. If you're a woman in America, if you're low income, what are the expenses of pregnancy? I've talked to many, many, many women. Well, it's the medical bills. You're living where you used to live. You're eating what you used to eat, you know, maybe some clothes as you grow larger. But if you're low income, all 50 states will pay your medical bills through Medicaid. That's just a fact. And then as soon as the baby's born, even if you're from the hospital, you can say, I'm going to safe haven the baby. I'm walking out of it because safe haven's one of the places. And then they'll find the carefully vetted homes that are waiting to adopt a newborn baby to give the baby to another home. It's the love, well,
One of the things I want to mention here is that in the court system, the judicial system, there's many times that the grandparent or the father wants to adopt the baby and wants the mother or partner to go ahead and have the baby and not abort the baby. They want the baby. They want to take custody of the baby, or the grandparents want to adopt the baby. But the courts frown on that, and social services frowns on it. So that's another serious issue, because men have no rights, and neither do the grandparents. And that's their biological grandchild or their biological daughter or son. And so I've never understood how that is even possible, that the father who helped create the baby doesn't have a right to take custody of their own child.
It was all a distortion because the courts wanted to help the baby, the mother, not have to care for the baby. Roe talks about the distresses of motherhood like it's a terrible thing. But Safe Haven protects the man and the woman. Let's talk about the woman first. Some women get abortions because they don't want to have anything to do with the man. Maybe it was a one-night stand. Maybe it was an abusive man, and they don't want it. And they know if they have that baby for 18 years, they'll have a relationship with the father for 18 years. Well, if she safe havens the baby, it's gone. She'd have to go through termination. She doesn't have to do anything. Just safe haven the baby. She's free from the man. From the man's standpoint, he can file his paternity claim, and he's logically the best person to take the baby as it's the natural father. So he can be the father and adopt the baby, not have any relationship with the woman, but he can be the father of that child. It's actually the perfect solution for both the man and the woman.
Right, right. So, so now that we're coming very close to the end of the show, I want you, and I loved everything you said, and it's very empowering and educational, and I want everyone to get a copy of your book. So now is your time to shine. You can tell us anything you like about the Justice Foundation and about your book and about anywhere they can contact you or the organizations, and also how to buy your book.
Well, thank you. Thank you so, so much. I'm the author of the book, but the copyright belongs to the Justice Foundation. All the proceeds go to the Justice Foundation. I'm the president of the Justice Foundation, but it is a 501c3 nonprofit charity. We provide all our legal services at no charge to individuals, as we did for Norma and Sandra for many years, as we do for the women hurt by abortions. And we have three major things that we help people with, and you can get your copies of all this on our website. You can buy a copy of the book, which the proceeds go to support the Justice Foundation. So when you buy a book for yourself or a friend, you're not only helping yourself, because it is a fascinating story. It's endorsed by American Family Association and many other groups, and people have said wonderful things about it. I should be reading what they said, but anyway, you'll be supporting. We have a Center Against Forced Abortion. We estimate we're saving 1,000 to 2,000 babies a year by training pregnancy centers and police and counselors how to prevent forced abortion, and you can help prevent it. Like the three most common types are adult parents forcing a minor daughter to have an abortion against her will or some other adult. Number two is the man forcing a woman to abort his child because he doesn't want to be a father. And number three is human trafficking and prostitution. We have a Center Against Forced Abortion under us on our website. You can get all the legal materials to stop that yourself, because knowledge is power. Number two, Operation Outcry. We have about 5,000 testimonies, but our goal is to get 10,000 testimonies. And if you've had the abortion pill, we'd like to have your testimony. We'll protect your identity. You tell us whether to use your full name, first name, or initials only. If you haven't told your family, we recommend just use your first name, and we'll protect it when we file it, but it's legally admissible. The abortion pill is worse than surgical abortion for two reasons. Number one, when the doctor does it, you feel like somebody else is responsible, and he's told you it's not a human, and you don't know what's going on. But when they give you the pills, you go home, administer it yourself, you become the abortionist. This is what women tell me in their mind. You feel much more guilty. And then the second thing is, when the doctor does it, you don't see the baby. But when you take the second pill, the baby is expelled from your womb, usually onto your bed, your couch, the floor of your bathroom, or your toilet, wherever you are. So the murder occurs in your own home. You can have post-traumatic stress just from remembering what happened in your own home now. And I remember the first time a woman called sobbing, "They lied to me. They lied to me. They told me it was not a baby. This is a baby. I can see the arms and the legs. They lied to me. This is a baby. What can I do?" She wanted to know if she could bury her baby in the backyard, and they told her it was just a mass of tissue. So the trauma is far worse. The bleeding can be far worse. These are some of the issues that are talked about in our book. But if you've had a chemical abortion pill, anyone, if you've had an abortion and this is triggering deep emotions, go to our website, the Justice Foundation, click on Operation Out, go get free abortion recovery so that you can be healed and forgiven and forgive yourself. And then so COPPA, Operation Outcry, the Moral Outcry petition, anybody can sign the petition. And then we're going to help all 50 states. Eventually, we're going to work where the battle is hottest, like Ohio this fall. We're helping Ohio and educating Ohioans to vote against an effort to enshrine abortion in the Constitution of Ohio. Why would you want to kill a child, hurt a woman, when you have a safe haven law? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Attorney Alan E. Parker, and also the author of this wonderful, wonderful book that you will want to get a copy of and join the fight to save the babies, the natural-born Americans and babies around the world, Reversing Roe versus Wade, My Journey with Roe, Doe, and God. God bless you, and please keep up the good work. Thank you so much for being on Columbo Chronicles.
Thank you, Rose.
You're welcome. And Attorney Alan E. Parker has left the building, and be sure to support pro-life and give life to the mother and the baby, because we don't even know how many babies, how many women die on the abortion table who are sent to the emergency rooms. There's no records of those. And because I tried to look it up, so maybe this Justice Club will start publishing statistics on the adverse effects of having an abortion. It's not as simple as people think. Post-traumatic stress disorder, guilt, it could be a lot of different things, bleeding. We just don't know how many females have been sent to the abortion, to the emergency room, and we're just not really specific on how many natural-born Americans have been aborted who are not with us today to fight back and defend our borders and our country and God and our Judeo-Christian foundation and pro-life, because without babies, we do not have a future for our beautiful United States of America, our republic that was once operating by the rule of law, the supreme laws of the land that also demand and the pursuit of happiness. So on that note, I want to remind you that injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you tune in to The Rose on Columbo Chronicles and the Justice Club. So God bless you, and get your copy of Obamasaurus, Irwin International Award winner, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, order it from your bookstore, or Is America Under Martial Law? Is it? And expand your mind, as well as dressing up and dressing down, and how outsourcing and globalism has affected our worldwide and American fashion industry and millions of jobs, and how China has affected the American fashion industry. So expand your mind. Think outside the box. This is food for thought. I've been an advocate for justice for 30 years, and I have interviewed people around the country. I have done extensive research on these topics, and it's information you need to preserve our nation and to protect your children and grandchildren and save America. That's what we're all about here on Columbo Chronicles Live.
Well, my friends, time flies, and now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Columbo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Columbo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.